The BS Report is presented by Subway. Football season is over. Footlong season is just beginning. For a limited time, get any piled high regular footlong for just $5. Any footlong, just $5. Hurry in, Subway. Eat fresh. Eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, spring training's starting to heat up. We talked about the Yankees and their depth chart with my buddy Jacko last week, and I promised him that he'd be able to come on the podcast this week, and we'd be returning the favor for him. He'd get to go through the Red Sox depth chart and make his little comments and take the same pot shots that I took last week. I did want to mention, if you go to Amazon.com right now, the third edition of my Red Sox book is available, and I think it's getting released at the end of March. It's a limited edition. We didn't print that many copies. I just really wanted to update the book because the last one came out in 2005. I think over the last 4 years, so much has happened with the Red Sox as a franchise and as a national story and the way the franchise had changed perception-wise. And I just thought, why not keep adding to the book? You know, I didn't sign a contract to release a third edition or anything. It's something that just I wanted to do. So I picked 9 or 10 columns that I had written over the last 3 years. I kind of honed them down and made them as readable as I possibly could. And I wrote footnotes for them. Probably took about a week. Something that I just, you know, personally just wanted to do. It doesn't really gain me anything. I don't expect you to buy it. You don't have to. I'd like if you hadn't read the first edition or the second edition, I'd love if you bought it. If you're interested in, you know, having all the columns in one place from 1998 to 2000 through 2008, there you go, $10. So that's why I did it. I basically did it for me because I'm an only child and I do things like that. Anyway, let's get to Jacko. We're calling him at work and he does know we're calling this time.
Complex Litigation. This is John.
Oh, Johnny!
What's up, Willie? How are you, buddy?
Who's playing third base for you?
That would be the immortal Cooperstown-bound Cody Ransom.
Oh, beautiful.
We got a lot of hope for Cody.
Beautiful. You always want to go with the guy who's making 50 times less than the guy you're paying for third base.
I think he actually makes about 1 million times less.
What do you think he makes?
I'm guessing he probably makes the major league minimum.
What's that? Do we know?
It used to be 200 grand, but I think it's higher now. It might be like...
It's probably like
250. It's probably like 4, I think.
All right, so if he's... All right, let's say 330.
All right.
So, and A-Rod's making like 28?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so he's making like 75 times less.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got about a whopping 183 at-bats and a career average of 251. But according to Johnny Damon, he's the best athlete on the team. And he has a 60-inch vertical leap or something. So
really?
Yeah, he's supposedly an amazing athlete. There's a guy at work was telling me that he saw something on YouTube or someplace of like this stack of like gym mats and Cody Ransom like taking one step and leaping up on them, and they were like really high off the ground. So
it's like that famous Penny Hardaway workout we always joked about where he was making half-court shots with his penis.
Exactly right. Exactly, yeah. Cody Ransom's vertical leap is up there with Penny Hardaway's mystery workout, right?
The workout it's never been solved. What happened there?
It's kind of like one of those things, too, like at the NFL Combine when they make these guys do, like, these reps with bench presses, and they're like, oh, he did 50 reps at 340 pounds or whatever. Like, unfortunately, that's not how games are decided in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know? Unfortunately, the vertical leap won't really be a huge factor in baseball. Won't help him hit, sadly, so...
The quarterback ran a 4.640. Unfortunately, he's still going to get chased down by any good defensive player.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't factor that one in.
Right. That's right.
So exactly. What was the reaction like? I noticed our friend Mike Vaccaro. Mike Vaccaro?
Yeah, Vaccaro, I think.
Yeah, it's Vaccaro.
What was the relation to actress Brenda Vaccaro?
Well, I live in L.A., so I never actually heard his name said because, you know, we don't talk about New York sports in L.A. or any sports for that matter.
Right.
But he was throwing out the Ewing theory possibility.
And was
gracious enough to.
He credited you?
Yeah, to credit me and say some nice things. I appreciated it.
Oh, that's good. I didn't read that column of Mike's, but that's good. I'm glad.
You know, it's like a big quagmire out there where people just take stuff from other people. But in this case, he was generous enough to mention where the theory came from. And
good work by Mike.
Nice words. Good job by him. But he was saying that A-Rod, really the quintessential Ewing theory candidate, which I've been kind of mulling over, but it's almost like I feel like it's too obvious.
It is. It is obvious. But maybe. Maybe the team's like, you know, no distractions, no steroid talk, especially when that, what's her name, Serena Roberts book from Sports Illustrated, I think it comes out later this month.
Right.
So there would have been like a whole other round of questions. Now he'll be off in Colorado rehabbing or whatever. By the way, why is Colorado like, you know, like Dr. James Andrews is down in Alabama, isn't he? Why is Colorado like the place you go for a hip injury? Is it from the skiing? Is that why? Colorado went out to like Vail. I mean, Colorado. A-Rod went out to Colorado. He went out to like Vail, I think, to have his surgery. And they said he's going to like rehab out there. So I couldn't figure out why it was that Colorado is the hip injury capital of the United States. Like that's where the Mayo Clinic of hips is in Colorado.
I agree with your ski thing.
It's got to be, right?
Because a lot of people break their hips skiing. Although you would think it would be somewhere in Florida because so many old people break their hips.
That's a good point, too. Yeah. There could be, like, maybe aging stars or socialites, don't they like to go to Vail, you know? That's kind of sort of a trendy place. Aspen. You know,
I need to figure out where it is because my father, now age 61, who lives in Beacon Hill and has fallen 3 times in 4 years and broken his arm once and has some sort of weird wrist thing now.
Their neighborhood, I mean, it's on a hill. It's super hilly.
Yeah.
And their house is sort of dangerous. You know, a lot of stairs in their house. So.
Yeah, they have a 5-story house.
Right.
And they have all these hills, as you said, that during the winter become icy, obviously. And my dad compounds the problem by walking around in loafers.
Yeah.
Even in the dead of winter, walks around with these slippery black loafers because he quote unquote doesn't like boots. So he's wiped out 3 times in 4 years. So I'm just going to start researching the best hip places now. Maybe I'll get in touch with A-Rod, see how his recovery is going.
Call Boris and see if they'll give you his doctor's name.
All right. Well, here's the Ewing theory, which you can find on page 2. It's in my subject archive on the Sports Guys World page. It was written in 2001. It's a theory that was given to me by a reader named Dave Cirilli. Nearly 10 years ago. We've been tinkering with it ever since. Here are the two crucial elements. And this is back in 2001. A star athlete receives an inordinate amount of media attention and fan interest, and yet his teams never win anything substantial with him other than maybe some playoff series. Well, A-Rod fits that one.
Check one, yep.
That same athlete leaves his team either by injury, trade, graduation, free agency, or retirement, and both the media and fans immediately write off that team for the following season.
That's where you run into some trouble because I don't think people are writing off the Yankees. One, because he's only supposed to be out until May at this point.
Right.
And two, even if he was to come back May or June or whatever, people don't think that – they think the Yankees are good enough to withstand his loss, I think. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's been some people leaping off the bandwagon, but I think the consensus is that they will still be a good team and still be competitive and can, you know, muddle through without him for a little while.
So you don't think the Yankee fans are like, we're screwed, we don't have A-Rod?
I don't think so, no. I was a little concerned when he was out for four. The initial reports were that it was nothing, and then, you know, there was conflicting reports, and eventually there was some reports that he could have been out for as much as 4 months. If he's out for 4 months, they got some problems because, as we talked about last week, you know, their lineup is not the greatest without him in it.
Well, there is a precedent with A-Rod.
What do you mean?
Well, in 2001, after A-Rod, Ken Griffey, and Randy Johnson all left Seattle over the course of 3 years, the Seattle Mariners won 116 games that season. Did not win the title, but still.
That's true. That's right. And they lost to the Yankees in the ALCS, I think, or the ALDS.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that was exciting. That's when the Yankee fans were chanting sayonara to Ichiro.
I will say that one of the main things of the Ewing theory is that if the team starts doing well, everybody, the shadow of the guy, it kind of works as a reverse shadow. And there'll be all these hidden quotes. People will be saying, yeah, this clubhouse has never been tighter, or
yeah,
it hasn't really been a circus this year, like stuff like that, and it's these little veiled darts.
Yeah, well, that's a distinct possibility. I mean, you know, all the distractions of the, you know, the steroids and everything else that goes with A-Rod and, you know, Joe Torre's book and the A-Fraud and everything else. So I'm sure the Yankees exhaled, you know, a big sigh of relief that they don't have to deal with those questions for a little while he's gone, you know. That's
and then,
helpful.
Well, and then, you know, let's say they get off to an early good start.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they got three at Baltimore, three at KC, three at Tampa to start the season.
It's good.
Yeah, Baltimore stinks. I actually
you're
like
frisky
KC.
On Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm a little frisky on KC. Tampa, I see being the year after team this year.
Oh God, yeah, I agree.
Too many people on the bandwagon. Too high expectations. That it's always a recipe for disaster.
Of course, repeat listeners of the podcast will know that all last year you and I were writing them off from April through like late September, I believe, waiting
yeah,
for their
true.
Collapse. So you know, take that with a grain of salt, people. But
take it with a salt shaker.
Yeah.
Then you got four at Cleveland, three at Oakland.
People like Cleveland this year, don't they?
Yeah, I don't. I personally do not. Three home for Oakland. Then three at Boston, three at Detroit.
Three home with Oakland. That'll be the Jason Giambi emotional homecoming to the Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah, that'll be good.
That'll be good. He'll get a standing ovation.
Then you got the sixth game at the end of April, three at Boston, three at Detroit. It's a lot of road games to start the season. One, two, three, six, nine. 15 road games and 7 home games in April.
Of course, because Major League Baseball, and it's completely owned by the Red Sox, so that they conspire against the Yankees and have to take a big roll early on.
Well, then
obviously.
Then you have a nice May.
Do the Red Sox play any road games this year at all, and not just in April? Or
Listen, it's not my fault your team gets penalized because you cheat.
Right, exactly, right. We were the only ones that used steroids in the last 10 years, according to the Mitchell Report, I forgot.
We start off with three at home against Tampa.
Mm.
Then we immediately go to the West Coast for six against the Angels in Oakland. Then back home, Baltimore, two against Minnesota, three against the Yanks. And then we have a 9-game trip, Cleveland, Tampa, and the Yanks. 8-game trip. So that's
all right. I mean, I take back my earlier comments.
That's fair. Well, let's keep our eye on this Ewing Theory thing. And as you follow your beloved Yanks.
Yes.
Make sure you pull out any veiled darts at A-Rod for
us. I certainly will. I'll keep the quotes.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you'll bury all of them. Yeah, no veiled darts. I haven't heard one.
Everybody's missing them. Right.
Okay, let's go. Last week we did the Yanks on the podcast, the depth chart. This week we're going to do the Red Sox.
I'm excited.
And, I you know, it's equal time rules, like with politics.
Yeah, very good.
It's not fair that I should be able to rag on the Yanks without you getting an equal time opportunity to rag on the Red Sox.
I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy.
Jason Faratek, catcher.
It's funny just to hear it. I'll tell you, Jason Faratek, really one of the great off seasons in the history of Major League Baseball. Good work by Jason to become a free agent coming off, like, what did he hit last year, 220?
Well, pre-All-Star game, 218 with a 299 OBP, 354 slugging. Heated up after the All-Star break, 223 average, 333 on base, 367 slugging.
Someone threw some water on him.
So he's at least going uphill.
Basically a corpse, and he declares free agency and then declines arbitration, which would have assured him $10 million, and he basically has to come crawling back to the Red Sox for, what did he get, like $5 million, and then there's a player option for next year?
And
I think there's a team option, but they can buy him out for like $3 million or something like that.
I don't want to talk about it.
I'm sorry. And by the way, he should just exercise that option for next year right now. Grab onto it like a lifeline.
I gotta say, is Scott Boras good at his job? I mean, I guess he got to share that giant contract, but man,
he didn't do wonders for Manny or Veritek.
Well, how the Manny thing played out just confirmed my whole complicated theory last year with how Boras orchestrated that whole thing. Because basically, Manny did all that, you know, tarnished his image in the game, and, you know, basically ruined any chance that the Red Sox would retire his number, and the fans have, for the large part, turned against him. Also, he could gain an extra $5 million bucks.
Right, exactly.
And the difference is that the 41 or 42 million, whatever it was, that he would have made in 09 and 2010 for the Red Sox, if they had picked up those options, that commission would have gone to his agents. Now,
right.
Boris gets the commission on this 2-year, 45 million. So really, the only person who made off in this whole thing was Scott Boris. I don't understand why people still, I mean, yeah, blame Manny for being an idiot and for allowing himself to be manipulated, but I don't understand how anybody can say that Scott Boris wasn't 100% responsible for everything that happened last season.
What does he get as an agent, 20%?
No, it's like 5.
5%?
Yeah,
so he did it all for like, so he got basically an extra 250 grand? Well, he gets 5% of the whole thing, so he gets 5% of the 45 million.
Yeah.
He gets 2.25. That's not bad.
Yeah, that's
I don't want to sound like Jim Calhoun here, like, oh, 250 grand, that's like chump change, you know, but in the grand scheme of things for Scott Boris, it is. But doing it for 2.25 million, yeah, that's not a bad move by Scott Boris right there. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, if you keep betraying any ideals of humanity for money, it eventually adds up, you know?
Sure. I mean, it cost him his immortal soul, but he's got a few bucks here on Earth, so that's good.
First base, Kevin Youkilis.
Yeah, Kevin. Obviously, I wish I could make fun of his stats, but I really can't, sadly. I can make fun of his YMCA mustache, though. Look, he had going in the early part of spring training. The handlebar mustache where he looked like Johnny Cakes from The Sopranos, or like he was auditioning for The Village People Part 2. That was exciting.
You should have said the late Johnny Cakes.
That's right. That's right. That's awful.
Killed himself.
I take that back. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry for him and his family.
Yeah,
Kevin he had Youkilis, that look going, which was good.
I was reading the Baseball Prospectus book for 2009. Always a pleasure. Always a little too complicated for me, but I enjoyed it anyway. And they were saying Youk had like an alarming number of home runs that barely cleared the wall. Like he either led the league or was in the top three. He had like 12 homers that cleared the wall by less than 9 feet or something.
He's had 2 home runs in the WBC so far, though.
No, I know. I'm just saying that they hinted that his power numbers in 08 might have been a slight aberration.
Really? Well, that's
yeah.
good. I'm excited for that.
You know who they said should just be good for as long as he can walk and has hand-eye coordination? Dustin Pedroia.
I was afraid of that.
They said his 2008 season, there was no aberration potential at all for 2009, and that he just is who he is.
Oh, that's sad. I was hoping for a come-down year after last year.
You know, Johnny, he's one of the only people that ever won a rookie year, first season, MVP second season.
I'm familiar with that. I'm familiar with his MVP from those EA Sports commercials for MLB 09 or whatever.
Be careful, Johnny. Tread carefully.
Which were able to convey exactly how arrogant and annoying Pedroia comes across, even in commercial form, as he does in real life after in post-game press conferences.
So
that was exciting. That was well played by EA Sports.
Says the guy who counts Paul O'Neill among his 5 favorite Yankees ever.
Well, that's true, but he was a Yankee. It's different. And you know what's troubling to me, though, is in today's New York Post, there's an article about Jeter and Pedroia and Youkilis about how they're all buddy-buddy, like they pal around. Pedroia's like the team, like jokester, and he hung up an advertisement Jeter has for some deodorant company where he's like outside of Fenway, and he's like, this deodorant makes every day a walk in the park, even this park. Pedroia was like busting his chops about it. And they're all buddy-buddy, like he and Youkilis. Youkilis is like, oh, yeah. I could see why he's the captain. He's so great. And Jeter's like, yeah, those guys are fun, and Pedroia's really funny. It really bummed me out. Like, I was like, no, I don't want to hear that from the captain.
Yeah.
I hate it when these guys, I don't know why.
They fraternize?
I hate when they fraternize. That really bothers me.
Yeah,
I liked it better in the 70s when, like, Fisk and Munson hated each other openly.
I was just going there. Yeah, when Fisk and Munson, like, they openly look for reasons to get in a fight.
Right, and, like, Nettles is breaking Bill Lee's arm or hyperextending his shoulder, whatever he did. I liked it better when there was some bad blood. Chapter 30 of Things Free Agency has ruined because now you can't really hate anybody because you're all just in it for the money, basically, so you could be teammates next year, you know?
I would have thought Jeter would have had more ill will toward the Red Sox for the 3,000 times we've thrown at him.
Exactly. I mean, you know, obviously there's bad blood between guys like Youkilis and Jabba, and you know, when Pedro played, they didn't really like Pedro. I don't know. As much as I love Jeter, and I realize this is blasphemy, I'm not sure he's the captain. I think you should give it to Posada. Posada has real, like, hate for other teams and gets a little fiery, you know? I don't know.
Wow.
I think Jeter's too nice to be the captain. It's blasphemy, I know, and I may be struck by lightning, but
he was raised by a nice family.
I really don't like it when they get along, because that bothers me.
Yeah, I agree. We see it in basketball all the time. These guys basically make out with each other after the games. Kobe and LeBron, if they French kissed after their last game.
I mean, even in football, which is an inherently violent game, like now you see these guys when they have like the post-game prayer afterwards, like at midfield.
Yeah.
They're on opposing teams. I mean, Vince Lombardi wouldn't have been any part of that, you know?
Mike Lowe at third base.
The speaking of bad hips.
Yeah. I don't think he's swung I don't think he's had an at bat yet in spring training.
I read today he's actually playing in his first game today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that's good.
Will he bring the walk?
You glossed right over shortstop, though.
I'm getting a shortstop.
Oh, okay. You went to third first. All right.
Will he bring a walker up to home plate? Like, how's this going to work? I'm nervous.
That's the second gaping hole in your lineup after Veritek just going around the horn.
I don't like hip injuries. I mean, you know, if I could trade off the Mike Lowell hip injury for the A-Rod hip injury, obviously I'm going to do it because
sure.
He's more valuable to the Yankees. But at the same time, it's just you don't see a lot of guys coming back from hip injuries.
Plus,
it's not a great track record.
Mike Lowell just looks old. You know, when he's head off, he's got all this gray hair. He just looks kind of haggard. I mean, he's not that much older than A-Rod, but you just get the sense A-Rod's going to bounce back a little better than aging Mike Lowell is, you know?
Did you know he was Manny's best friend on the team?
Mike Lowell was?
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that, really.
I was too. Yeah.
No, I find that interesting. I can't really, you know, he seems like such a kind of reserved guy, and Manny's such a free spirit. I can't see them having much in common.
It's kind of like our relationship.
Exactly. Do you think that Mike Lowell, when he was in Connecticut, he drove through and called later and didn't come and visit Manny either?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I called you. Hey, for the listeners, I was passing through Hartford on Friday and called Jacko from the car and forgot the part where I could have just stopped by and seen him.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you live 3,000 miles away or anything. So that's
yeah,
right.
It's not like I come back once a year. The great part of that trip was I kept my Bristol streak alive of not actually going to Bristol. I had one meeting got canceled, and then the other one I was able to convince my editor, Rob King, to go to lunch instead of meeting on the Bristol campus. Well, it's one of those things. Now it's been 4 years. Now I want to see how long I can keep it going. We had somebody's assistant, when it looked like I was going to go on the Bristol campus, called it a historic appearance.
Really?
Yeah, that's how infamous I am for not going to Bristol.
See, if you were in Bristol, they could have just sat you down and put you on first and 10 with Skip Bayless.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. I worry that when I'm there, they're going to give me some drink. It's like, here, try this new Bristol Gatorade, and I'm going to drink it, and then all of a sudden I'm going to be arguing with LeBron about LeBron with Skip Bayless.
You're going to wake up and be arguing about T.O.
How did I get here? Is that Jay Crawford?
T.O. is Buffalo Bill. What's going on?
It'll be like when Valerie Malone got roofied on 90210 and woke up next to Noah, and it took her like 5 minutes to process what was happening. That'll be me. She's like, Skip Bayless will be screaming at me, and I'll just be glancing around. What are these lights? Where am I? So anyway, that's why I don't go there. Shortstop.
Yeah.
Julio, I'm calling him to try to change his karma. Julio Lugo.
Really?
Yeah, because if I say he's Julio Lugo, it reminds me of the guy I watched the last 2 years.
He's having a good spring.
He's streaky, though. Like, he's one of those guys. He could hit 340 in April and then 190 the rest of the season.
And Jed Lowry's having a terrible spring, isn't he?
Yeah, Jed Lowry.
He was the heir apparent. We were in Vegas last year for House's bachelor party, and that was actually Jed Lowry's first game, and you were expecting big things.
I was, and he had a weird year. Like, he had 46 RBI and 260 at-bats, but he also came up a lot of times with guys on. But then you look at his stats, and 258 average, 339 on base, 400 slugging, he's got no speed. He's a solid defensive player, not great.
You told me that I might be bouncing my grandkids on my knee someday, telling them where I was when the Jed Lowry era began, but
yeah,
I don't think that's going to be the case anymore.
It might have been a little hyperbole on that one.
Might have been.
Jason Bay in left field.
Sure.
Canada's own.
They were just eliminated in the WBC yesterday, sadly, by Italy.
Oh, your friend the Radman was on the team.
No, he didn't play this year.
He didn't play?
Not this year, no.
Oh. Jason Bay, my big fear with him is, you know, 1-2 week slump coinciding with Manny going on like some sort of 10 home run and 14 day binge, followed by you know, the sports radio, nothing to talk about, getting a little restless.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of things snowballing a little bit. And I think he's in a contract year, too.
He is. They haven't been able – they've been talking about they were going to have him signed to a long-term deal, but they haven't done it yet.
So they have that hanging out. I personally would not sign him. I think they need more pop from one of those three outfield positions.
Well, they need to see what he does in a full season under the pressure cooker, too, or at least
yes.
the start of a season. I mean, he was good for them second half. He wasn't – obviously, no one's Manny, but he was solid for him. Unfortunately, I was hoping that he would wilt, but he didn't. But we'll see what happens under a full year of the pressure.
I'm going to give him the good but not great.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
Last five games against Tampa, 1-for-3. 1-for-4, 0-for-3, 0-for-3, 1-for-3, with 6 Ks, no homers, no RBI, 4 walks.
There you go. That's what we want to see from him this year as a Yankee fan.
I mean, you know, it's very small sampling, but I got to say, in Game 7, I had no confidence that he'd get on base.
And he didn't.
Jacoby Ellsbury in center, there's been a little revisionist history on him. He definitely hurt his wrist and he struggled midway through the season. And then he had a little bounce back the last couple months. But everybody's just kind of conveniently skipping over the part where he was so bad in the playoffs that we basically had to bench him.
Right, and that Coco Crisp, who was supposed to be the afterthought's afterthought, was a key factor for you last year in a lot of games.
Yeah.
He played a lot. Jacoby Ellsbury, like, I'm kidding around about the Jed Lowry era, but it was supposed to be the Jacoby Ellsbury era. I mean, this guy, touted by every Red Sox fanboy for years and years, and the dream date of every pink hat wearer in Red Sox Nation, male and female, and yet he has not really lived up to the hype in any way, shape, or form.
32 playoff at-bats, 6 hits, 3 walks, 531 OPS, scored 2 runs, 7 RBI. Last 4
and
games.
And that's cute because didn't he have like a huge 07 postseason?
Well, no, I'm saying this was just 2008.
Oh, okay.
Well, he went 3-for-5 in game 1 of the Angels series. And then after that, he had 3 hits in 27 at-bats and got a DNP for the last 4 Tampa games.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, and he was, after his first taste of the majors in 07, he was charging like, I saw something in the Boston Globe that he was charging like $125 for an autograph session.
Yeah.
And you could like take a picture of him, but you couldn't like look at him or something.
Yeah, he needs to settle down.
A little heavy on Jacoby. Take it easy, Jacoby.
You know what else I don't like? His 336 OBP last season.
Yeah, that's not helping anybody.
And his 394 slugging. Yeah,
I mean, Coco Crisp, so he's the man.
That's why I like Baldelli as a fantasy sleeper, because I watched Ellsbury all year last year, and I know he's got amazing speed, and there was a stretch in April and May where it really seemed like this guy was headed to become the greatest center fielder in Red Sox history. But from what we saw the last 4 months in the playoffs, I'm not even sure he's an everyday player yet. He might be 2 years from now, but he's not a sure thing. So I kind of feel like Baldelli potentially could steal some at-bats from him. You're going to get the J.D. Drew injury. You might see Rocco get like 400 at-bats. And if it happens, it'll be the greatest mitochondria comeback story ever.
I was just going to say, anytime you have a guy that's coming off some kind of a strange disease that, you know, people couldn't figure out what was wrong with him for years, it's a good position to be in.
Yes.
You're counting on him. But he is local favorite, Rocco Baldelli, from Providence or Rhode Island or whatever. So.
I keep telling people, I just have a good feeling about this one. I really do. I feel like this just works out. J.D. Drew, right field.
He's in midseason form already. He had a fly back in a blizzard to get a shot in his back. It's exactly what you want from your corner outfielder that makes $14 million a year.
What's the over-under
games for him? Like 90? Are you happy with 90 games out of him this year?
Are you asking me would I take 90 games?
Yes, exactly.
You said I'm guaranteed.
Would you sign for that right now?
Where would the 90 games take place? Like beginning of the season or end of the season?
You get the call. Just 90 games.
If you promise me 25 pre All Star break and then 65 post All Star break, I take it.
Fantastic. $70 million contract where you were bidding against yourself for Nancy. That's fantastic.
I can't even come up with a comeback.
Tweak the old back. Ouch.
He helped us win the 2007 World Series.
It's true, he did. He had the big grand slam, the $70 million grand slam.
I find this amazing, and technically it's true, although you could argue that they're paying more for dice when you throw in the giant signing bonus, where they, also, speaking of bidding against themselves, where they bid like $12 million more than anybody else. J.D. Drew is the highest paid 2009 Red Sox player.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, I think the Red Sox are going into a mode here where they're going to, I don't know that they're going to go out and get big free agents. You can see some signs. I mean, they signed all these guys to low ball contracts. I don't mean the long-term contracts, but I mean, like, they went out and got Brad Penny and Smoltz and all these, like, roll-of-the-dice guys.
Well, no, they always do that. The thing that's different is that they've signed some of these young guys who were pre-arb eligible to long-term contracts to lock them down, like they did Lester, Yuklis, and Pedroia.
And I mean, I can't believe that these guys agreed to those contracts. Like, Lester signed the six-year, $30 million contract. I mean, I understand he's not arbitration eligible and he's nowhere close to being a free agent, but he could have waited and gotten three times that money.
No, but I mean, he's had one really good season. He battled back from cancer. Red Sox stuck with him. Like, I think he just wanted to be there and didn't want to think about it.
All these guys, Lester, Euclid, they all signed for low ball contracts. Something shady's going on. I think it's like an NCAA thing where they pay them somehow.
Stop it.
Somehow, or there's pictures or detectives. I guarantee there's something nefarious going on. These guys signed for like the lowest possible offer. It's outrageous.
You know, the funny thing is, even though I'm laughing, I totally picture Lucchino like some manila envelope. Hey, Dustin, you're going to sign this contract. You're going to sign this contract right now, and this goes right to the inside track.
That's exactly right. I mean, I just sense that it's just shady. These guys, I mean, I can't believe their agents agree to it. Forget the guys. I can't believe there's not an agent saying, well, why don't you just wait a couple of years and you'll make $100 million, you know?
Yeah, but then you had their business manager saying, we can invest the money. It'll actually work out better long term and all that stuff.
Right, because it's so good to invest in the, given the way the economy
is. It's a good market.
Yeah.
Real estate's going up.
Yeah, you can get in.
Some bargains.
You can get in cheap, that's for sure. And you have, so couple that with the fact that, what's his name, John Henry comes out and says, oh, we need to have a salary cap. Because offering to share $170 million, that was fine, but going to $180 million was outrageous and excessive and shows the need for a salary cap. Give me a freaking break.
He needs to stop talking.
He really does.
He needs to stop talking and just be the guy who has all the money.
Right, right.
We have Lucchino, who's more than capable of talking. And
right.
We have Tom Werner, who's a great guy and who should always be the guy who talks.
Yeah, he's the only one who seems halfway likable.
Yeah, he should be the one.
He doesn't come out that much.
He should be the one that always talks. And John Henry also needs to stop answering emails. Just because somebody from the media emailed you doesn't mean you have to respond to them.
Exactly.
David Ortiz at DH.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He's the key to the whole season. I guess his wrist is the key to the whole season.
Yeah, you look at his stats, and really, you could make a really good argument that the wrist was single-handedly responsible for his subpar season.
Or he's just getting older, and he's not in the best of shape, and he's in decline.
That's my dad's. Yeah, my dad keeps bringing up Mo Vaughn. Finally, I had to just punch him in the face, tell him to stop. But
that's what really caused his broken wrist. It wasn't the smelly
ice.
It's
a combination.
Right.
I don't know what to. There's nothing to talk about either. He's getting old, or that might have been an aberration. We don't know.
If you're a Red Sox fanboy, you're like, oh, it was just an aberration, and he's great, and he's going to hit 45 home runs this year. And if you're not, and you don't know, you're like, well, he could be on the downside here.
I don't know. I haven't watched the spring training game yet because of the new rule I made 2 years ago where I refuse to watch preseason games in any sport. Because every year I end up seeing somebody. I call it the Gerald Green corollary. I watched some exhibition game with Gerald Green like 3 years ago. I was like, this guy's the next Michael Jordan. He's out of the league a year later. So there's nothing to learn from preseason. There's no reason to watch it. Starting staff.
Yeah.
Josh Beckett.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster with him, right? I mean, 1 year he's good, and 1 year he's not so good. Last year he was iffy, so he'll probably be great this year, right? Isn't that the way things work with him?
Hello, arm trouble, shoulder velocity down. I mean, velocity is fastball down, and we'll see. I haven't I've been intentionally avoiding basically all the articles in the newspaper every day, as well as all the games. I just don't want to know. I want to be all blindsided at once. If Ortiz's wrists look terrible,
yeah.
If Lowell has a bad hip, if Beckett's fastball is like topping out 89.
The thing is, the Red Sox and the Yankees are both so overcovered and overreported.
Yeah, I can't handle it.
I mean. And basically, there's nothing to write about for the next month, but you have all these reporters of newspapers that still exist down at spring training, and they have to write about something. So it's like it's pointless to read these articles because it's all rampant speculation. Nobody knows.
I was at my dad's house on Sunday morning reading the Boston Globe, which I try not to read, and the front page was like subverted. Ellsbury. The year of Ellsbury? Like one of those kind of headlines. Yeah. So I was like, all right, I'll read this. And, you know, it was just this long piece, like a pseudo feature about this could be the year, he's doing great, blah, blah, blah. No mention of his complete collapse in the playoffs.
I mean, the truest thing ever said, and you wrote about it, I think, whoever the guy was in Hollywood, the guy that made The Exorcist, William Friedkin or somebody, and he was like, what's the quote, nobody knows anything?
Oh, yeah, William Goldman. Yeah, William Goldman.
Nobody knows anything. That's the truth when it comes to Hollywood and certainly when it comes to sports and, like, the season ahead. Nobody knows anything. You don't know if what Big Poppy's wrist is going to be like. You don't know if Sabathia is going to be can handle the pressure of New York and play in the American League. You don't know if Burnett's elbow is going to blow up. Nobody knows anything. It's fun to talk about, but to treat it as gospel is ridiculous.
The only thing you can tell is if a pitcher just looks like he's put it together. Like if you have some guy in his like early 20s or mid 20s who you know could never totally locate his fastball or whatever, or you know, only had two pitches and he needed three, but then they'll have the spring training and the guy's like, oh yeah, he has a split finger now.
Right.
Or, oh yeah, he suddenly has control. Or, oh, he's thrown 98, not 95 this year. Which, you know, steroids obviously. But,
right.
I think that's the one thing you can learn. Other than that, I don't think it really matters if you hit the hell out of the ball in spring training.
No.
Or anything.
Because the numbers are, I mean, the guy, you're playing against guys that aren't even going to make the other team and, you know, you don't know anything.
Dice K?
He's an enigma, an anomaly. I mean, who knows? He always ends up with good numbers. He's the best five-inning pitcher in baseball, I guess. Throws 120 pitches in five innings because he either has no control. I guess it's not that he doesn't have any control. I guess he just pitches carefully.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wish I could mock him, but I really can't. What did he win last year? He won 20 games, right? Or knocking on the door?
I'm not going to defend Dice K.
No?
I'm not.
I mean, he's not worth the money they paid and the posting fee and everything, but he's solid. I'd be happy if he was a Yankee. I wish I could kill him, but I can't. I don't mean kill him literally, by the way. I mean, like, in the Mike and the Mad Dog senses and, like, bash him, you know?
I want to kill him, Mike, but...
Exactly, right. That just sounded bad the way I said it. I want to kill him, but I can't.
29 starts last year in the regular season. 167 innings. Like, that's almost impossible.
Yeah, it really is.
I can't even... And... It doesn't even begin to tell the story about how frustrating it is to watch him pitch game out and how he freaking nibbles. I mean, look at his playoffs. So, let me see here. So, 450 ERA in the playoffs. Not terrible. 16 strikeouts, 9 walks. 16 innings and 3 starts. He made it a solid 5 innings against the Angels. He threw a gem against Tampa, 7 inning shutout. And then went 4 innings in game 6.
Yeah. How does Vegas ever put, like, a line on his games? I mean, you just don't know what you're going to get.
And last year they didn't have the bullpen to really, you know, kind of combat the Dice K factor. This year the bullpen's a lot better, which we'll get to. So maybe we'll have a better year. Lester, you know, probably the best pitcher on the team.
Yeah, he is. I can't say anything. I can't say negative against Johnny. I wish I could.
Tim Wakefield somehow back again.
Yeah, I mean, talk about going out there with a walker. Hopefully they can get 2 for the price of 1 for Han Lowell.
The
pitch that he throws doesn't take any toll on his body, really, although he somehow always has a back injury. I mean, with that little league delivery, and it's like, yeah, he, you know, Phil Negro pitched till he was 60, right, almost? Well, to his 50s?
It's one of those things that he's streaky. He'll have good 6 weeks, bad 6 weeks, and somehow the good 6 weeks never coincide with mid-September through October.
Yeah, what's he, 42, 43?
And believe me, I love Tim Wakefield, and I've had him on many fantasy teams, and he was totally underrated in 2004 during the comeback. The you know, coming in, throwing the knuckleball to Veritek, somehow keeping the Yankees at bay. Like,
yeah,
to me, he's unassailable. But I just, at the same time, it's, if he's your fourth starter, I'm not sure where that's going to take you.
Yeah.
And Brad Penny at number five, who, you know, I hated that signing. I just thought it was terrible.
And Brad Penny hasn't been able to make a spring start. He was scratched last week,
it's just terrible. I mean, it's like you whine about contracts, and then you throw a $5 million flyer at Brad Penny. You know, I think it was either last year or the year before, $4.5 million flyer on Joel Piñeiro.
Right.
But this team, for a team that wants a salary cap, is just throwing these contracts around like manholes.
But if he can't go, Brad Penny, and I don't think he's going to be able to, you have old Buckaroo, he can step in, right?
Buckholz looking a little better. I thought this was interesting, though. In Schilling's blog, 38pitches.com, which I highly recommend.
I've got it bookmarked.
It's a good one. I mean, he's pretty candid. Say what you want about the guy, but he's pretty candid, and he's, I think he's a decent writer. He mentioned just threw out of nowhere that he would absolutely trade Buckholz for Jared Saltamacchia.
Really?
In Texas. It was just weird because he played with Buckholz, and usually Schilling's one of those guys who defends anyone he played with. But in this case, the implication to me was that, yeah, I don't know if Buckholz makes it. I'd rather take a chance on the catcher. Like, that's what I took from him. Maybe I'm reading too much.
I hope that Buckholz didn't read that blog on a computer that he stole, because that would really be upsetting for him.
Come on, Jeff. Come on. That worried me a little bit. Because, you know, back in the day when there were rumors they might trade John Lester for Johan in the winter of 2007,
right.
Schilling had this whole blog post like, this is crazy, John Lester.
Yeah,
he realized he came through in game four of the World Series, and this guy's a competitor, and there's no way we should give this guy up. And then a year later, just casually says, yeah, we should trade Buckholz for Saltamacchia.
He's pushing Buckholz under the bus for Saltamacchia, who's not even that good.
A little weird.
Very odd. And you got John Smoltz as a possibility, too. You got an embarrassment of riches in starting pitching.
I think they signed John Smoltz, though, just to have a good guy in the clubhouse.
Really?
I think anything he does...
You're not hoping for anything out of Johnny?
I'd see him ending up in the bullpen as like a 6th, 7th inning guy and just a good chemistry guy.
All right. Now, you don't think he's going to step into the starter role at some point? Or maybe even the 4th if Wakefield falters?
If he does, God bless him.
All right.
I think his biggest achievement this year will be teaching. He'll take Takashi Saito, Hideki Okajima, and Dice out and teach them how to play golf. I think that'll be his number one achievement this year.
That's a good foursome.
Thank you. The bullpen is nice.
Yeah, it's solid. Sadly.
Justin Masterson, who's brutal against righties. Love
him. He was good last year.
I love the Saito pickup. I watched this guy in the Dodgers, and I just thought he was good. And he had one bad season, and it was explainable because he was a little banged up. And I just think that was a nice flyer. I like that one. Okajima.
Always good, unfortunately.
Always good, but, you know, there were some shaky signs last year from him, but whatever. Manny Del Carmen, pretty good last year for the most part. If he's your 9th pitcher, that's not terrible. And then Javi Lopez, whatever. And then the closer, your favorite, the one, the only, Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, favorite would be, that's exactly what he is. I'm excited that he wouldn't sign a contract with them, though, so I hope that he holds out for a lot more money on the free agent market in a couple of years and breaks their hearts and breaks the hearts of Boston, and then there'll be a million blog posts and comments about how they never really liked him and he wasn't that good. Kind of a la Manny. That's what I'm looking for.
You mean the post-departure smear campaign?
Exactly. Right.
Well,
and then Lucchino and his detectives will leak some anonymous quotes about Papelbon and the nightlife or some shady aspect of his character. So that'll be exciting to watch.
Well, to have a smear campaign, you'd need every national and local writer as well as the local radio station in your hip pocket. They're not even close to having that.
Right. Only in our worst nightmares could a propaganda machine of that type be assembled by a Major League Baseball team.
Yeah, I mean, that would be almost unprecedented. How could they do that?
I don't know. It would take really evil geniuses to accomplish.
Red Sox odds, 5-1 to win the World Series.
Yeah, I liked it better when they were an incompetently run franchise run by some mysterious trust with no real leadership, and they didn't really spend a lot of money. But now that they're good and competitive, it's a lot less fun for me, I got to tell you.
This is interesting. 3-2 to win the division. Yanks are 10-11.
Yeah. So you have to bet $11 to win 10, and you would bet $2, and you win 3 on the Sox. So the Yankees are a slight favorite.
Yeah, I would think the Red Sox would have better odds. What do I know?
Well, you know, and didn't Baseball Prospectus pick them to win the AL East, that they would have more wins than the Yankees? I think they did.
Well, Vegas has the Red Sox over-under is 94. And for the Yanks, it's 95.5. So there you go.
Yeah, so they're right there. It'll be a nip and tuck.
I'm going to give you someone to watch out for, Johnny.
All right, I'm excited.
A little flamethrower. Went to the University of North Carolina. First-round pick. Had an awesome year in the minors. Converted from a starter reliever. Frequently hitting 101 on the radar gun.
Wow.
You'll be seeing him this season, Mr. Daniel Bard.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. He was their number one pick, right?
Not only that, but he's on my extensive AL fantasy roster where we draft minor leaguers. Hedge and I have been monitoring this guy for 2 years, and he will come up this year and throw BBs.
All right.
Keep an eye out for him, Johnny.
I'll mark that down, Daniel Bard.
Two last things before I let you go. Max Kellerman left his ESPN Radio New York show today. I'm throwing a hat in the ring, our collective hat.
Fantastic. He left it? Why did he just give it up?
I don't know. Details have not come out.
Is there some ugliness or...
Who knows? I had a reader email me a month ago and say that he was at a restaurant where Max and Mike Francesa were having dinner together.
Really? Uh-oh. He could be the new Mad Dog, do you think?
Mike and the Max Dog?
Mike and Max. It works.
Mike and Max?
He's got the alliteration down.
We'll be back in, Mike and the Max, right after this. Mike and the Max, maybe?
Yeah, but that's his first name. He can't become the Max.
Do you think... All right, let's say hypothetically, Francesa and Kellerman. Does that show work or not?
I don't. You know, I've only seen Max Kellerman on TV. I've never listened to his radio show, so I don't know what he's like. Might be a case of too many lead dogs trying to be there. You know,
could be the two alpha dogs, like a Kobe Shaq.
Exactly. I'm not sure that would work. One guy's got to be the second banana. I got to know his role. You know.
2003 Kobe and Shaq, not 2000 Kobe and Shaq.
Right.
It'll be interesting. I could see the show being great for like 3 months and then them fighting to the death.
I mean, if you've already been the star of your own show, it's tough to go back now and be the supporting actor.
Hey, Max, let me tell you something. You're in the big time now. This is my show. You are a second banana, my friend.
Hey, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. You just see me?
I'm Jordan, you're Pippin. Got it? But that'll be interesting. Keep an eye on that one.
I will.
And Johnny and I officially throw our hats into the
Absolutely.
Ring for Max's 10
to 1. Any tape of a podcast is our audition tape.
10 to 1 show? You give 2 weeks notice for work, right?
Absolutely. I'd go down and do that, sure.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we're throwing our hats in the ring. And then second, it looks like the tranny is leaving the real world. We're taping this on Tuesday. It runs on Wednesday, so...
You know, I DVR the real world, and it cuts off for the last 30 seconds, so I didn't see this week's previews, and I'm blindsided by this news. Do we know why she leaves?
Well, they ran a commercial, and it said basically she's broke from her reassignment surgery and just needs to make money and can't afford to live in the house anymore. My personal feeling is that, you know, God forbid a reality show is ever on the level, but you know how they went with the 8 roommates?
Yeah.
Which they'd never done before?
Yeah, they knew that there was some issues somewhere.
Yeah, I think they decided, all right, we'll bring in our first transgender roommate, and then, you know, we'll make a deal with her after, like, 6 episodes or so, she takes a hike.
MTV's like, we've made our point, and that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of, and then it'll make it say, oh, yeah, I can't afford it. Like, come on, you knew what your expenses were.
And what do you have to afford? I mean, you don't have to pay rent. Do they have to buy their own food?
I think the issue is she needs to make a job to pay for...
to pay the medical bills.
For the Bobbitt surgery, yeah.
Yeah, I see.
Is that what it's called? I don't know.
may well be.
So anyway, yeah. So
yeah, that's
keep
troubling.
An eye on that one. Yeah.
Are you fired up for the HC, the big HC, Patriots?
Oh, yeah,
final?
We should talk about that as well. When is that? Do we have a time?
It's Friday at 4:45 on ESPN2 on the Deuce.
Friday, 4:45 East Coast time, ESPN2, and we're playing American?
American University, who was not the Patriot League when we were in college, I don't believe.
They're a
new addition to the Patriot League.
You know what? You know why they're in now?
Why?
Because we needed a safety school for the
nice.
Patriot League.
Nice.
Is the game in Worcester or
in
Washington?
It's in Washington. Home of American was the number one seed in the Patriot League. And this is the rubber match. They each won on their home court.
Rubber match.
It's a rubber match of Holy Cross and American.
It's like the thrill of Manila. It's just like it. Well, I hope we win.
As always,
I'll root. I'll get excited if we make the tournament. I will get my hopes up, and then they'll be crushed in round one.
Exactly, and then we'll get a chance to see our team go and play some you know, number four seed and score 37 points on national TV and lose by 40. It'll be exciting. I've already thrown down the gauntlet because this year I'm going to be in one of these pools where you have like a draft. We're going to have a draft on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like 10 guys and you pick till the teams are gone. So six teams each or whatever. And I've already thrown down the gauntlet when I was invited to join that I said, not only will I be in it, but if Holy Cross wins on Friday, they're my first round pick. So it's like a draft. You could draft like Carolina or Pitt or UConn. Everybody drafts teams till they're gone, and then you get points for upsets and how far they go in the tournament. I'm going to ride my alma mater. I'm going with the Cross, baby. To hell with the Tar Heels and the Huskies and the Panthers.
I am on the record as saying I'm not giving money again until we win a round one game.
Yes.
I said that 2 years ago, and I've stood by it. And also on my sports fan bucket list, Holy Cross winning a round one game.
That's all we want. I mean,
probably
we're not
at the top.
We're not asking for a George Mason situation of going to the Final Four. We just want to win one freaking game. Just one.
I just want to see the guys on the bench jumping up and down and hugging and celebrating and.
Plus, then we could be in one shining moment.
Oh, yeah.
And wouldn't it, and I mean, this is really, now I'm getting greedy, but if that one win could be with Gus Johnson or Bill Raftery behind the mic, really my life would be complete.
Yeah, you're right. That would be, it's number one on my sports fan bucket list. Gus Johnson calling a Holy Cross upset.
That would be so fantastic.
Yeah. Oh! Seder time!
Exactly.
Well,
That would be so good. We really got our hopes up 2 years ago, me, you, and House, when they played Southern Illinois, the Salukis, because it wasn't like they were playing like Kansas or Kentucky or Carolina or Duke or somebody.
Yeah.
And then it was just, I mean, the game was over at halftime. It was just awful, awful showing.
There hasn't been three guys that bummed out since Ed Norton and his two friends at the end of 25th hour when he was telling Barry Pepper to just punch him in the face over and over again. That was the last time we've seen emotion dip to that level, I think.
Because we spent an entire day, one, drinking, and two, talking ourselves into the upset of Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
Just sad ending.
Well, good luck to our friends at Lacrosse. Thank you, Johnny. A pleasure as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Good time. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Target to set off.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
And that concludes another episode of the BS Report. And here's 55 more words that Bill Simmons intended to mention, but unfortunately ran out of time. Now you can get any regular piled high Subway footlong for just $5. The keyword is any. The sweet onion chicken teriyaki, savory chicken and bacon ranch, the meaty taste bud pleasing Italian BMT. All the regular famous Subway footlongs, just $5. Subway, eat fresh. See store for details.